Last week, we had a long 30-minute, 13-second episode on symbolic numbers. This week, we're all about symbolic colors. The three primaries, red, blue, yellow. The neutrals, black, white, gray. The metals, silver and gold. And the vivid purple, green, and orange. We can't leave out brown, the color of ode sacrifice. Join us for ways to enhance your writing just by changing a word. It's the Enhancement Series on The Right Focus. Welcome to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers, newbies and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Writers, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, grab a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. Symbols, something concrete that stands for an idea. In our last episode, we looked at the primary symbolic numbers. Images can also be symbolic. We know this. We know a heart stands for love. A billowing flag represents patriotism. We look to our personal star, which reminds us of our hopes and dreams. Fire is a trial that tests us. All symbols developed over time in logical steps. Most of the meaning solidified in prehistory. We can see the natural world and the influence of our own bodies in the development of number and color symbols into nearly universal meanings, which means those symbols approach archetypal status. In today's episode, we focus on color symbols. For example, blue is the color of sky in nature. The early gods who oversaw our petty achievements were thought to live in the sky. Since the gods are a constant, eternal form that never changes, and Earth is all about change, as Heraclitus put it so succinctly, truth is associated with the universal constant, blue, sky, the heavens, which represents the immortal realm and therefore eternal truth. Facts, such as the Earth is flat, that changed, but truth never changes. In nature, green is the color of all growing things. Grass and leaves are long-lived and constantly growing, so green represents life and growth. Artists paint with words. Writers paint with images. The first images are colors. At the same time that symbolic numbers were developing in primitive cultures, ancient men and women were looking around and applying meaning to the colors in nature and our bodies. In spring, everything greened up to grow, so green came to represent life and growth. Our ancestors bled when they were cut while working or hunting. Red represents what we must sacrifice in order to achieve our goals. One primitive culture, the Paraha of the Amazon, only have three color names. Three! We have more synonyms than that for all our colors. For example, red is cardinal, persimmon, crimson, scarlet, ruby, garnet, cherry, carmine, wine, vermilion, florid, ruddy, maroon, brick, and more. And all of those are different colors with hues. The tribe on the Amazon have no words for numbers, and their colors are white for light time, black for night time, and red, blood. Brent Berlin and Paul Kay named 11 basic color categories in their famous 1969 study, and it matches to these ancient color: white, black, red, green, yellow, blue, brown, purple, pink, orange, and gray. The colors and the times that are associated with certain color also carry secret yet recognizable meanings. When we don't give close attention to colors, we can be led astray in our comprehension of a work. The best example that I know is the Robert Frost, The Road Not Taken, with its yellow road. It's a springtime wood. Consider a forest in autumn. It's rich with all sorts of colors. In spring, when trees are just beginning to unfurl their leaves, that's when we see that green-yellow color that's more yellow than green. You know, it's the Crayola crayon color that looks like a lovely green until it streaks an odd yellow on the page. In winter, a forest is brown and black after leaf fall. All through summer, the forest is green with multiple shades of greens available to us. So when Frost says two roads diverged in a yellow wood, he's talking about early, early springtime. He then goes on to talk about traveling through life. The traveler is just entering the wood, which represents life, the long passage of years of life. This is then reinforced by his later lines, somewhere ages and ages hence. Our persona is currently a youth, and as the youth do, our persona believes he has control over his destiny. Yet caution, Frost warns, another color associated with yellow, don't lie to yourself. Many high school and middle school teachers have deceived their students into reading this poem and thinking the road that they take matters. Frost says the road really doesn't matter, and that we lie to ourselves when we think the road we take is different. He tells us three times that the roads are just as fair, are worn about the same, and that they equally lay. It's what we do on those roads that matter to our life, not the choice of the road. Unless, of course, you're Stephen Crane's wayfarer, who discovered that the road, with its thick weeds, are actually knife blades. Here are the basic symbolic colors. This time will go much faster than the symbolic numbers, which was a half hour. I promise. Red represents blood, of course, sacrifice, and the wounds inflicted by trials. For example, Christ is associated with red because of his wounds on the cross. Blue represents the heavens, truth, true blue, and what I talked about earlier. Yellow is a warning color, a color of caution. It does have some positive connotations of light, especially when we talk of the light of knowledge, which comes from the sun. But it also represents, very negatively, cowardice, a yellow streak, people have said. Green represents life, growth, youth, and negatively, jealousy. We talk about green-eyed monster, green with envy. Spring and morning are associated with the green of growing life. They're the start of life, just as the greening up in spring signals the reawakening of the earth after the dormancy of winter. Purple represents royalty. Kings rule by blood right, red, and divine right, blue. Kings inherited the crown through blood lineage, or they won it on the battlefield because they spilled the opponent's blood. Divine right means that the gods intervened to ensure the victory of the chosen king. Black means death, winter, night, the dark of trouble and of ignorance, absence with a negative connotation. In modern times, artists create black by adding all the colors, so modern writers have begun to use black as a symbol for all things added in, a sort of chaotic plenty. White also represents winter because of snow. It represents light and knowledge, purity, unstained innocence. A pearl is white, and it represents absence with a positive connotation. White can have a negative connotation when associated with the smothering snows of winter. For example, white in Robert Frost has to be carefully considered because he's thinking of the smothering snows, and he does talk about a white spatter which is filled with poisonous venom. Again, modern artists leave out all color to have white on their palette. So modern writers have begun to alter the color to create an idea of the vacuum, a sucking hole that deprives of everything. Gray represents sorrow, rain mist. Silver is a mirror color. Mirrors are backed with silver to reflect, and mirrors reveal truth. Silver withstands magic, which is the color of the moon. In the mythic trope, vampires cannot see themselves in mirrors because they are not truly alive. Yes, I know modern writers decided not to work with the mythic trope because it didn't fit their world. Sigh. Gold is tested purity. All that glitters is not gold. It represents richness, but also softness. All that glitters is not gold. It is richness and wealth. But pure gold can be shaped by hands, so it has a softness to it. Thus, in the King Arthur myths, Arthur is associated from birth with gold because he and his dream will be corrupted. Orange represents summer, noon, the ripening to harvest. The maturing orange represents the adult stage of life. The blazing orange is the heat of summer. The deepening orange, not the pumpkin color, is the deepening of September into autumn. For thousands of years, the Northern Hemisphere has dominated literature. As the Southern Hemisphere generates more and more literature of that hemisphere, these symbols may change for writers from Australia and from South America. Brown represents autumn, afternoon, aging maturity. Since dried blood on pale cloth is brown, the color stands for old wounds, old sacrifices, and scarred veterans. How do we use symbolic colors? Take a moment to find N.C. Wyeth's painting of King Arthur retrieving Excalibur from the Lady of the Lake. I'll put a link in the show notes. The fabled hero is receiving Excalibur and its miraculous sheath from the Lady in the Lake. His blue cloak is lined with red and trimmed with gold. So blue represents truth, red represents sacrifice, and gold is the corruptible wealth. If you know the story of Arthur and his round table, then you know that the high ideals become corrupted, and Arthur sacrificed himself at the very end. Gold also appoints his saintly colored armor and the boat. There's three white swans flying away. And the gray mist that's hovering just over the water? It represents the sorrow for all the bad events that happened during the course of his reign. White-bearded Merlin huddles in his dark cloak. Is that deep blue or black? Is that a gray beard? His foreshadowed sorrow because he prophetically knows all Arthur will achieve and not achieve, and the reasons for his failure. The lake itself has a mirror-like quality, as the arm of the Fairy Queen from an eternal existence offers the magical sword. Have you ever known lake water to be so mirror-steel? Small ponds, yes. Lakes, no. Wyeth has painted the symbols that reveal the deeper elements of the Arthurian legend. As symbols enrich Wyeth's painting, so will they enrich your writing. Play with them as Wyeth has done. In F. Scott Fitzgerald's Great Gatsby, for example, early on, a character enters a room with a blood-red floor and a ceiling that is a bridal cake confection of white plasterwork. From that early chapter, the reader knows that Daisy and her husband and their wider circle have the appearance of beauty and innocence, yet they have walked on the blood of others to get to where they are. They are corrupted. And the symbolic colors used in the novel prove that over and over. Irene Hunt fills her young adult novel, Across 5 Aprils, with symbols that become prophetic and symbolic. The 5 years that the novel covers are the April to April from 1861 to 1865 of the American Civil War. Here's an example of a description from Chapter 1. The south breeze brought the scent of lilacs and set all the frosty green leaves of the silver poplar to trembling. We have three colors here, green, which is frosted, silver, and lilacs. Let's address the lilacs first. It's a pale blue, pinkened a little by red. Yet Irene Hunt is not referring to the lilac color or the flower. Instead, lilacs is a prophetic allusion to the Walt Whitman poem, When Lilacs Last in Dooryard Bloom, about the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln. Whitman expresses the grief of many in the North about Lincoln's assassination. He was a lightning rod throughout his election and presidency for standing for abolition. In the novel's last chapter, we have the protagonist's grief at hearing of Lincoln's death. So in this passage, we actually only have two colors, green and silver. The south breeze stands for the newly formed Confederacy. The frosted green leaves are the lives about to be killed by the cold decision to cause war. Green is a color of life, but these are frosted, frozen at a temperature that can kill. Wise farmers don't plant until after the last frost date, and they try to harvest before the first frost of the autumn. Silver represents the Confederate States of America, a reference we are assured of making with the opening south breeze. Silver here is not the symbolic meaning normally expected, but a connection to the South. Here are two more passages. Huge silver poplars, again, silver represents the Confederacy, towered above the cabin, which is the family's home. It represents the USA. Their roots extended like giant claws. So here the silver poplars are destructive, and therefore it represents the war, making the ground rough, the passage says, which represents the battlefields of the war, and robbing it of grass. Lives will be lost. So this represents the dying soldiers on both sides. Here's another passage. Shadows grew long, which is increasing numbers of the dead, among the trees of Walnut Hill, and the dogwood branches looked like ghostly clouds with a background of misty purple thickening behind them. The shadows, growing long, represent the increasing numbers of the dead. The trees, of course, of Walnut Hill is the family cemetery, and so it's not a good reference. The ghostly clouds of the dogwood represents innocence, which has now become dead. And the misty purple is the Union blue, covered with blood. Here's how Rider Hurst used symbolic colors in a character description to show Jethro's loss of childhood before its time and his assuming of adult responsibilities at age 12. Jethro had grown tall during the years of the war, and although he was still slender, there was a taut look about his body, as if all his muscles needed strength. The great blue eyes of his early years were darkened by shifting lights of gray and green. Let's focus on the blue eyes of his early years. A child can clearly see the truth. The darkness of death is giving him maturity. So he has the shifting lights of gray, representing sorrow, and green, because he's still focused on life. Consider these questions about symbolic colors. Why does Jesus Christ wear purple robes? It combines the red of his mortal sacrifice with his heavenly person. What in our everyday life is yellow and means light and knowledge? It's the sun. Why is white associated with winter? Well, we have the smothering snows up north, and that represents the absence of life when everything goes dormant. Why is rain like sadness? We have that sort of depressive feeling when it rains, and the gray represents sadness. Here are three time questions. How is spring like a newborn baby? Summer like a young person, and autumn like a middle-aged adult. Next week, we continue in the realm of interpretation. We look at strong imagery, of which symbolic colors and numbers are just a part. Then we look at archetypes, and lastly, illusions. Allegory will finish off our episodes on enhancements through the interpretive realm. Inspiration for today comes from Alfred Kazin. In every real sense, the writer writes in order to teach himself, to understand himself, to satisfy himself. The publishing of his ideas is a curious anticlimax. For writers, of course, the role of learning and practice is very important. We learn and we practice by applying in our own writing, and that way we elevate our craft. All of it, though, is to satisfy our inner self, not merely to publish. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by Emma Lee from Writers, Inc. Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at winkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mind your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, right on.